This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
This is E.O. Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network News.
Humanist Network News.
I ain't afraid of your Yahweh. I ain't afraid of your Allah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus. I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God.
It's November 28th. You're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
And I'm your host, Jess Constantine. For those of you joining us for the first time, humanism is a non-religious philosophy based on reason and compassion.
We've got quite a show lined up for you today.
Yes, we do.
Somehow we secured an interview with Philip Pullman, who's the author of The Golden Compass. You've probably heard of this fantasy novel. It's the first in a trilogy called His Dark Materials. There last night was the world premiere of the film The Golden Compass, the first installment of this series, starring Nicole Kidman and others. Mr. Pullman will be speaking about the world that he created, which is inhabited by spirits and talking animals and all sorts of fantastic creatures.
We also have James Howard Kunstler, author of The Geography of Nowhere and a leading critic of Suburban Sprawl.
In other words, he'll be speaking about a world we wish were fantasy.
So up first, we have British novelist Philip Pullman, who's most famous for his trilogy, His Dark Materials, which has won many prestigious awards in the UK. Now, unlike C.S. Lewis, whose fantasy series, The Chronicles of Narnia, which is heavily influenced by his Christian faith, Pullman is known as an outspoken atheist in Britain. Now, you might be familiar with the controversies surrounding the release of the movie, The Golden Compass. The Christian right is calling for a boycott of that movie because they're claiming that it feeds children with atheist and anti-Christian values.
Hey, Jess, let's play the trailer from that movie.
There is a world where witches rule the northern skies, where ice bears are the bravest of warriors, and where every human is joined with an animal spirit who is as close to them as their own heart.
Are we going to see the child?
I should think so.
But this world is dominated by the Magisterium, seeks to control all humanity, and whose greatest threat is a golden compass and the one child destined to possess it.
Matt Cherry, executive director of the Institute for Humanist Studies, interviewed Philip Pullman by telephone this morning.
Philip Pullman, thank you so much for finding the time to talk to Humanist Network News just one day after the world premiere of The Golden Compass. I'm a huge fan of your work, and I hope that through this interview, we can get some of our listeners to catch the Pullman bug too. We don't have long, so I want to focus on the humanist aspects of His Dark Materials, the trilogy that starts with The Golden Compass. When did you start identifying yourself as a humanist and why?
Well, identifying oneself as anything for a writer, for a novelist, is a perilous thing, because then you find yourself acting as a spokesman for this cause or that cause. I've always tried to avoid saying I am an agnostic, I am an atheist, I am a humanist, I am anything else, because that way you're limiting the way that your books are received, and I don't want to do that. I want people to I want to be a bit more democratic about it and let people discover for themselves what cause is being espoused, if a cause is indeed being espoused. I don't suppose some of my stories do espouse a particular cause. So I've always hesitated, really, before describing myself as anything, and that includes humanist. However, I can tell you when I began to believe that there was probably not any supernatural influence on the course of world events, and that was when I was a teenager, and I began to read a little bit of philosophy that I could understand, and read about science too, and to come to the conclusion that probably the stories I'd been told in church were not actually literally true. So I guess that my lack of religious belief dates from quite a long time ago now, over 40 years.
So how do your humanist views show themselves in His Dark Materials?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that the views that I express in there are entirely humanist. It's just a question of labels, you see. My interest, though, as a storyteller, has always been in human nature and in its relation to the world we find ourselves in, the universe, putting it most broadly of all. I think that's the proper subject for fiction of any sort, really. The tendency of the story, if I can put it like that, is to celebrate what makes us human, including, very much including, the intellectual curiosity, which has been so deplored by generations of Jewish and Christian religious people, because it is what led to the fall in the third chapter of the book of Genesis. Eve was tempted by the serpent, not by lust, not by greed or for money or anything else, but for curiosity. You eat the fruit, said the serpent, and you will grow wise. That was what tempted Eve. And I think we should put up statues to Eve. I think we should celebrate Eve. We should have a National Eve Day, because this act of curiosity was the first thing that led us away from being the pets of God, so to speak, the little creatures who were allowed to run about and have fun in his beautiful garden, and to become sort of fully autonomous human beings. Now, this is a myth. In other words, something that isn't literally true, but it's sort of psychologically true. And I see this as being almost the central human myth, which is why I was writing about it in my novel. It's also been written about, of course, in Paradise Lost by John Milton, and I'm sure many, many other stories, and will be told many times again. But that, for me, is the central human myth, because it's about how we become human, how we become fully ourselves, fully conscious, how we move away from the old idea that everything that exists does so because of a god or gods.
So, although you're reluctant to accept labels, it sounds like any work that really grapples with the human condition is bound to reflect, to some extent, the author's views about the human condition. And
oh, inevitably. When you do something, when you do a long, complex task that lasts you for 7 years, as writing this novel did, this long story in three volumes, you have to take it seriously or you can't do it. You can't do a trivial task for 7 years with all your attention and all your effort. It's not psychologically possible. So when you're putting all of yourself into something, then that something that's produced at the end of this long time and this immense effort will inevitably show the views you think important, because these will be the values and the views that have underpinned your the doing of the work. So I'm sorry to be sort of reluctant to accept labels, but one of the reasons for this is that I don't like telling people how to read texts. This is the sin that the fundamentalists commit, in my view. They say, you must understand this book literally. Of course, this business where it says, you know, you can sell your daughter into slavery, you can take that as a metaphor. But all the stuff about homosexuals, take that as literal. And, you know, that's the way homophobic and misogynistic fundamentalists behave. I don't want to tell anyone how to read my story. If they read it, I think, if they read it with an open mind, I think they will find the values in which I believe clearly present. But I'm not going to tell anyone in advance what those values are.
So do you feel, you just went to the world premiere of The Golden Compass, do you feel that the movie makers were literal enough or managed to capture those themes, the humanistic themes of the book?
Well, in the first part of the story, which is the film that's just come out as The Golden Compass, the story concerns the actions of a little girl who finds herself bound up in events much bigger than she could have dreamed of, because she, like Eve in the story, does something out of curiosity. She goes into a room where she's not supposed to be, and she overhears something she's not supposed to overhear, and it all follows from that. And they told the story really pretty well. I mean, the film has all sorts of cinematic virtues. It looks spectacular. The performances are wonderful, including that of the little girl who plays the central character. And the special effects, because it's that sort of film, are beautifully realized. But I was very pleased to see they told the story clearly and well. The first part of the story is fairly straightforward. It's fairly simple and straightforward to do that with. when they come to the second film and the third film, if they decide that they can go ahead and make the second and third films, we'll have to grapple more closely, I think, with the issues that the story does make, Blaine.